This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Darshan Johan. We often say that we live in a democracy, that people have the power, that the direction of the country can be chosen at the ballot box. But how true is this? Does our current election system, known as first past the post, actually result in a parliament that is diverse and a proper representation of the Malaysian people? Or does the system only encourage a binary form of politics that, you know, encourages us to hate the other side rather than push for the side that we believe in? On the show with me today are Julio Jurid and Arthur Yeo, some of the finalists in Architects of Diversity's Hackathon Politics competition. Now, these two gentlemen produced a 10-page white paper discussing the issues with our current electoral system and also proposed a mixed voting system that will fundamentally expand democracy in Malaysia. And this is what we're going to be discussing today. So welcome to the show, guys. Now, to kick things off, perhaps you can give me an overview of the first past the post system. What exactly is it and how does it work?
So I think first past the post electoral system, or I think moving forward, we can just kind of abbreviate to FPTP, is a voting system that is used in Malaysia. And historically, it was chosen as a voting system in Malaysia due to its colonial history, because the UK also used the same voting system, and about a third of the world's countries also use the same voting system. It is a metaphor from British horse racing, where the post is the finish line, so the first horse to pass the post wins. So how it works is one would have single member constituencies, which means that there is one member of parliament, and in terms of choosing it, each voter would only cast a vote for one person. So everyone would have a vote for one person, and the person with the most votes, and in this case, it does not have to be a majoritarian, i.e. more than 50% of the votes, would win the seat. And the system in Malaysia is about 222 constituencies, each with one MP, and the voting system would be you cast a vote for one person and the person with the most votes win. So in a quick summary, that is the first past the post voting.
Right. Now, this is a system that, especially in recent years, it has drew a lot of criticism. People have pointed to how this system is flawed. But does this system have any pros to it? Does it have an upside? I'm wondering why this system was incorporated in the first place. Is there a reason why this system is still championed to this day? Arthur, you want to go?
I think primarily what we were reading on, especially when we were doing our research for the policy paper, was that FPTP primarily was from the British. So when due to our colonial era, colonial era, then that's when we inherited the whole system. And yeah, I think the biggest, I suppose, proponents and supporters of first past the post would be it's easy and there's no really complicated process involved. Everyone just gets one vote. The person that gets the most votes, technically, in whoever's fighting wins the position. So yeah, that's probably the best way that I can describe it. It's just the ease of adoption and also calculation is relatively straightforward.
I think if I were to add on to this, it does have some merits onto the point of having stable governments. Because one, with first past the post, you choose one candidate and this candidate wins, and then the party with the most seat forms government. That's, in simplicity, that is it. So what it does, it provides a clear-cut choice between voters. And then secondly, the stability comes from the rising of a coherent opposition in the Dewan Rakyat or in the House of Commons or the legislature in general, because it has a tendency to gives rise to kind of a two-party system, a strong government and also a strong opposition.
you know, we talk about stable government. Arthur, you mentioned the word simple, straightforward, you know, no complications when it comes to this. The person with the most votes win. On the surface, it seems like a very sweet deal, actually. You know, it seems like that's a good thing. So what exactly is the problem with the first-past-the-post system?
Okay, when we talk about things that were not right, one thing that kind of resonates with me as well is, and especially discussing electoral systems, is the concept of fairness. You know, when we talk about stable governments and simplicity, it's the kind of fairness of the outcome. But is the process itself fair? And that is kind of debatable, because electoral systems, in a sense, gives incentives to both the voters and also political party. And these incentives ultimately kind of shape the behavior. So I think this is, you know, when the conversation surrounding what is right and what is not right kind of come in and kind of add to the critical analysis or the critical discourse surrounding first past the post, because we hear things on how it's been used as a tool to strengthen the incumbents through gerrymandering, fear-mongering, and the likes.
Many have brought this up, this idea that first-past-the-post system, what it ultimately brings about during election seasons or even just throughout, what it ultimately transforms the political landscape is into this very polarized, adversarial type of politics. If we remember heading into GE14, a lot of the Pakatan Harapan supporters were not necessarily voting for Pakatan Harapan, but they were voting against Barisan Nasional. If you ask a lot of people, they say they went to the voting ballot box. They didn't know who was running, what was the ideology, whatever. All they saw was, okay, this is Barisan Nasional, I'm going to vote for the other one. And it's the same thing on the other side. We hear things like, you know, no DAP, no Anwar. And on the other side, they do the same thing. You know, they don't necessarily, you know, look at what the parties that they are voting for brings to the table, rather than what, you know, oh, you know, DAP is the enemy, so I'm just going to vote anything that isn't that, you know, the opposite. Talk to me about how first past the post ties into this.
If I were to kind of take a look at how first past the post ties into this, so I think what you explained just now is pretty much, you know, an instance of strategic voting. Mm. You just kind of, you know, vote against your true intentions or true preference and just kind of vote for, to take down the person that you dislike the most, or the potential candidate that you kind of dislike the most. You know, when you were telling that just now, kind of reminds me of this this movement that came in, which is like this Asalkan Bukan UMNO movement, where, you know, you can vote for anyone as long as you don't vote for UMNO. And that movement kind of raised and came about slightly before GE14. So think what first past the post does, or it incentivizes this one, and then second, it makes elections and campaigning a game of strategy instead of a game of a contestation of policies. It became the contestation of identities, and politicians realized this, that, you know, it's easier for them, because the other thing is that first past the post is a winner takes all system. You could win if it's a three-corner fight, for example. You can win with 34-35% of the votes, and the loser would just take home with nothing. And this gives a lot of incentives for politicians to just fearmonger and increase the cleavage by race baiting, scaremongering, and things like that. And there is no incentive to educate people on the policies from both sides of the divide on what they're offering. It's a matter of vote for me because that person is a, you know, that person is an undesirable candidate. And it's the same conversations with both sides as well.
Right.
So yeah, that's how I see how it turned.
Arthur, what do you think? How does this, you know, what you know, Julia brought up this idea of strategic voting, and this whole first past the post system, adversarial politics and all, fundamentally, when you boil it down, what exactly is the problem and why should people be against it?
What I would say probably the main issue for first past the post. For example, if I have this party, say Party Hijau, that you know supports some green energy and also green economy, etc., like they probably for me at least, I can't say for everyone, but they may resonate very well with my values and I want to vote for them, but I clearly know that they won't win, if that makes sense. Right. And therefore, like there's no point if I vote for them if ultimately it's just going to be a wasted vote. So I think ultimately, yeah, first past the post really boils down to their wasted votes. And like it just exacerbates the previous issue of strategic voting that Julio mentioned.
Continue. To kind of add to that as well, because an MP is very associated to a geographical region, it becomes more familiar to that. And in rural areas and semi-rural areas where development is still much a contested topic, it becomes personalized and an MP's role is tied to it as well. So things like bread and butter issues of welfare and development have always been tied to campaigning. So campaigning turns out to be who could give the best handouts, or who could give the, you know, who could tar the roads in time, who could give electricity in time. And this is especially true in East Malaysian constituencies. And, you know, as we all know, they constitute for quite a lot of the seats in Dewan Rakyat. So that's also an issue that first past the post as a system has acted as a catalyst.
On the show with me today are Julio Jurid and Arthur Yeo, some of the finalists in Architects of Diversity's Hackathon Politics competition recently, in which both of them presented their idea to change our electoral system from first past the post to a mixed method. After the break, I'll be asking them about their mixed method proposal. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today are Julio Jurid and Arthur Yeo, some of the finalists in Architects of Diversity's Hackathon Politics competition, in which both of them presented their idea to change our electoral system from first past the post, which it is now, to a mixed method system. And that's what we are discussing today. So, guys, now what you guys are proposing instead of first past the post system is very intriguing. It's called a mixed voting system, consisting of alternative voting and something known as mixed member proportional representation. Arthur, perhaps you can break this down for us. What exactly are y'all talking about here?
Yeah, so we in our policy that we propose a kind of like a hybrid system. So what we were conscious about is that in order to kind of like change the voting system for the better, we can't kind of like rip everything off and just say, okay, we're going to build from scratch. Like I think there needs to be a transition from where we are now to a system that not only is acceptable bipartisanally, but at the same time, it's not too difficult to implement because we can easily just revamp the whole thing and create a new system. But then we encounter the issue of not just political resistance, but actually public resistance as well. Because like to me, at least, if I don't know what I'm voting for, then why do I believe this is the best system? If for the past, coming will be 15. So for the past 14 in general elections, it has been working. So the first one we proposed is that we want to remove the problem for first past the post. And we decided to change the system that decides the winners for each constituency via an alternative voting or preferential voting system. So that's the first part of it. And the second one is the mixed member proportional. So instead of having MPs that are represented by their constituencies, like the Kawasan MPs, we decided to kind of add on more seats as a top up, but these are not directly elected and bound by a region. So essentially the ballot paper, there won't be much changes except for instead of pangkah one person or pangkah one party, they will have to start ranking candidates that are fielded in their particular constituency who they're going to vote for as an MP. And the overall kind of like the gist of AV is that there is no wasted votes, if that makes sense. Like no matter how you cast your vote plays a role in determining who wins the election.
So on that day, you know, we go to the ballot box, there's a paper, let's say there's five candidates in that constituency. People, instead of just choosing the favorite one, instead of you rank. So let's say there's party, you know, there's a cat party, there's a monkey party, there's a dog party, there's a crocodile party, there's a dragon party. You are going to rank like my favorite party, number one, dragon, number two, crocodile, number three. Is that what you're getting at here? And what does that lead to? Because you said that it's not going to, it will lead to no wasted votes. Why? Because right now, you know, I just vote and then the team, the player that gets the most votes win, the one that loses, whether it's they lose by one vote or by 10 votes or by 1,000 votes, it doesn't matter. You lose means you're out. How does it work in this system? Why is it a case of not wasting votes if we go with this alternative voting method?
Right. So I think where it lies different from the first-past-the-post method is how we count the votes. Mm. So as you mentioned just now, say, presume there's like five parties, right? Whatever animal that you mentioned just now. So you first count the votes by the first preference. So everyone's first preference is taken into account. And so you have two possible scenarios. Scenario one is where, say, more than 50% of the first votes go to, say, the cat party. So 57% of the electorate voted for the for that party. It means that this party wins, and that is the MP. Second, which is probably the most plausible scenario, is no one gets the 50% threshold, where you would have, say, 20-something percent more or less for each of the votes. And in this scenario, the candidate with the least votes gets eliminated. And the voters who voted for this candidate, say, for example, Fish Party got eliminated. So the voters who voted initially for Fish Party would have their second preferences viewed. They would take a look at which party they voted for as a second preference and transfer the vote to the remaining four candidates. And the process repeats itself up until a candidate reaches the 50% threshold and where a winner is declared. So I think in realistically, in the Malaysian scenario, taking a look at the last general elections, a large majority or quite a lot of our constituencies are mostly 3 to 4 cornered fights. So the counting of votes would be slightly simpler.
Okay, so that is for instant runoff. Now when we look at mixed member proportional representation, what exactly is the mechanism and how does this, you know, relate to instant runoff? What will people have to do on the voting day?
The original proposal was that we have 222 constituent MPs right now in the ORL. We're just proposing to top up to 300, so an additional 78 seats.
Right.
That sort of thing. That was the original conceptualization, but I mean, we don't actually have like, you know, a proper kind of like calculation to why it's 300. It's just more of like, you know, we just increase by, so kind of like member proportional will represent 1/3 of kind of like approximately 1/3 of the seats available. That's kind of like the gist that we went with, but we haven't really, there is no kind of like formal calculation to it. So what will happen is that people will get an additional vote. So we're right now, just to kind of like be, to avoid any confusion, we're only talking about like a federal vote, not the state doing
yes.
or whatever. We're just talking about federal, yeah. So instead of just voting for their council MP, they also get another vote, which they can vote for their favorite party instead. So it's no longer tied to any particular member. It's just that, which party do you want to vote for? So it could be like, you know, party dragon, party cat, party dog, and for me, I like dog, so it's party dog. So I vote for party dog. So, and then once we vote for that, then at the end of the vote counting, we determine like the percentage of votes that each party gets. To kind of like put it into easier perspective, it's something like a popular vote, if that makes sense. So like say 20% of the total votes for this federal kind of like popular vote goes to say party dragon. So dragon will get 20% of the seats that are allocated for the federal level. So 20% of 78. So followed on by, say, Dog, because Dog won 50%, so they get 50% of the seats. And what this system does is that they are offered the seats, but it's not any seat that a party can just say, okay, I'm going to give all 50 to my friends. So each of the parties would have to have a list of kind of like candidates that they will be providing, will be allocating the seats to in a particular order. So for example, if they won 9 seats, they must award in order 1 to 9 of those kind of like the MPs that they have kind of like selected for in the MMP. And to avoid any confusion, those people who are already fielded in the Kawasan, they cannot be repeated in that party list. So they are allowed to choose parties that may not necessarily be reflected by their MPs who are fielded in a constituency.
In your system, you know, I can choose the candidate and then I can also choose my favorite party and I can, you know, and that would be my vote. What is the benefit? Why do I need this to be part of, you know, what I'm allowed to do in elections?
So to me, I can kind of like boil it down to two things. So one is to decouple the constituents, to decouple the MP representing your constituency and the party itself. Like Julio mentioned that a lot of people who are voters in that particular constituency have like a strong tie to their MP, right? So however, if let's say they don't necessarily want to just like support the MP, but at the same time, they have another party that aligns with your values, like, for example, either like a youth-based party or whatever. And if that's the case, they have to make a choice, right? If they can only choose one vote for that particular constituency, then if that particular MP is not from this party they want to vote for, then by default, they can't vote for this smaller party, if that makes sense. And the second is to kind of like allow more, it doesn't immediately resolve the issue and say that, okay, in the next GE, if we implement the system, we'll get a variety of parties. It doesn't necessarily work that way. We're not kind of like saying this would be the silver bullet to solve all these issues. But rather, it kind of gives a stronger chance and a much more even playing field for smaller parties that may not have the necessary resources to kind of fight a flag war, or kind of like, you know, parties that may not be able to fight in a particular region just because that, you know, there's already one incumbent there, and there's only one very huge party there. They're going to fight, and no one in the current system will vote for the third party, that sort of thing. So we're kind of like giving them an alternative way to get elected to their one, right? Yeah, and that is the other benefit is to kind of like give smaller parties and newer parties that are not the traditional kind of like right now, which we see either government or opposition.
Right. Before we zoom a little bit, hone in on this idea of smaller parties, what we are also saying now is that it, from what I'm getting at, right, from what you guys are telling me, it's that it sort of frees people up rather than put them into boxes and you know, face all sorts of cognitive dissonance and fight with themselves and fight with their families. Because right now, if let's say, I'm just giving a random example, if you go to constituency of Khairi Jamaluddin, maybe there are people who love Khairi Jamaluddin, and they think he's a fantastic minister and a fantastic MP. But perhaps there are people who are like, oh man, but, you know, do I want to vote for KJ? Because like, I don't really feel like giving a vote to UMNO. And this is what people think about when they go to the ballot box, right? What y'all brought up, this whole idea of strategic voting. So you're just picking the what you feel, you know, will be the lesser of the evils and things like that. Whereas in this new system that you guys are proposing, I can go to the ballot box and not be bogged down by this weight or this box, right? I can just be like, oh yeah, I think KJ is a fantastic MP. Vote for KJ. I don't like UMNO. Vote for DAP, for example. That's what y'all are saying, right? Pretty much.
Yep, that is pretty much as well. And I think, to add another example, personally, when Arthur and I were kind of doing this, because I'm from Sarawak, and this kind of conversations kind of happen a lot as well. You know, like, say, for example, if my local MP is from GPS, but I don't necessarily want GPS to lead in the federal level, I could vote for a GPS MP because he, say, for example, takes care of the state interests and things like that, kind of, you know, fights for more autonomy for Sarawak. But at the same time, maybe I resonate with PKR's policies on the federal level. terms of kind of education, healthcare, things like that, I resonate more with this political party. So it gives me that choice. What it also does is it incentivizes and opens field for niche-based parties. So parties like, for example, they care for the environment, parties that care for the youth, or whatnot, issue-based parties. And by doing so, I would have a representation of my issue, of my greatest concern. For example, the environment, I would say at least have 2 or 3 MPs under this proposed top-up list of 78 that fights for the environment in the Dewan Rakyat. It gives voters a chance and an ability to express their preferences in elections, where you would have a first preference and a second preference of that. Really like this first candidate, but you know, in reality, this guy is his party is a bit eccentric, for example, or his views are a bit extreme, but I resonate with it. But if I know that a lot of the people don't resonate with him, I can still safely vote for this person and have my fallback choice. Say if my number two choice gets selected, I'm happy with this. I get, you know, I could participate in politics. I would kind of be proud of him and things like that.
You know, for a system, for y'all to suggest this system, y'all clearly believe that it will work. What other countries have y'all observed, studied, that use this format that y'all are proposing? And how has it transformed their electoral system for the better? Julio?
Right, sure. So in direct answer to that question, a strictly kind of alternative voting and also a MMP system, so an AV plus MMP system, to the best of our knowledge, has not been implemented in the in any countries. The closest that we've got, or the closest example we've got, was this proposal in the UK for this thing called the AV Plus. So it was proposed in the 1990s that the UK would change into alternative voting, and then the plus signs means for it represents the top up list. Of this, which is pretty much like the top up list that we discussed for the last 10 minutes. However, in a referendum in 2011, this proposal was kind of rejected. But if we're strictly talking about mixed electoral systems, in the sense that you have one system for, say, half of your MPs and the other system to elect the other half of your MPs, or whatever percentage, this has been done in a lot of other countries. If I recall correctly, Southeast Asian countries also kind of have this. I think Thailand and Cambodia would have it. The most notable example is Germany, for example, where you have the party list and also your local MPs, respectively. So yeah, it has been done in other countries. And
New Zealand would be another example, right?
Yeah, New Zealand would be another example. Yeah, and then the most canonical example of AV is Australia as well, where you could see that. So yeah, these are some of the countries that we've taken a look. Stuff that we've considered, as well as the societal composition, where we're talking about multi-ethnic societies, because, you know, if you were to transplant something from South Korea, which is very homogenous, I don't think it will work quite well. So we've kind of taken a look at what other multi-ethnic and perhaps segmented countries did to kind of put into a proposal. So it's pretty much the best of both worlds, kind of, in theory. That's what we are trying to aim.
As we wrap this conversation up, just some final thoughts from each of you. What is the problem with first past the post in a nutshell, and why is it important that we shift to this mixed sort of voting system with instant runoff, or, you know, alternative voting, plus this idea of mixed member proportional representation? Why is it important? Let's start with you, Julio.
Right, sure thing. So if I were to just kind of give the concluding remarks. I think the main issues with first past the post, one as a system, is that you could theoretically win without the majority of the votes, and that would have subsequent issues on the legitimacy of the results of the election. And in the Malaysian context as well, the first past the post system has encouraged fear mongering, and also have heightened the ethnic cleavages through campaigning along racial lines. And why the proposed system, the alternative voting or instant runner voting, and also MMP, fits in as a possible solution is that, one, it encourages the centripetalism of politics, which means that campaigning and the discussions surrounding politics will tend to the center. There is an incentive for political parties to campaign to other ethnic groups. And with the addition of the party lists, it creates and enables more non-traditional parties, such as issue-based parties, which are quite rare in Malaysia, to kind of contest and have their voices heard in Dewan Rakyat.
Arthur?
Yeah, I think it's time that Malaysia embraced much, much more diversity and inclusivity in its lawmakers and policymakers. So first past the post is not the only problem, but definitely a problem in increasing representation and diversity, especially among women, minorities, and even like, you know, PWDs or Aslis and that sort of thing. So yeah, I think it's time that we need to move on together as, like, you know, as Malaysia evolves, so does our voting system need to evolve as well to keep up with the times.
On that note, Julio, Arthur, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thanks for having us.
I've been speaking with Julio Jurid and Arthur Yeo, some of the finalists in Architects of Diversity's Hackathon Politics competition, in which they presented their idea to change our electoral system from first past the post to a mixed method, which would lead to a healthier democracy and a more representative elections. So if you missed any part of our show, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.